Welcome to In Deep. I'm Angie Coiro. The fight over eminent domain means so much more than whether people in Richmond, California get to keep their houses. It goes to the very power of financial institutions, powers they've used to defraud, lie, and get a pass from the government. What if the government stopped playing along? That's this hour on In Deep.
It is an event that is pretty historic.
Deadly flash floods after, quote, biblical rains in Colorado.
The anarchists have taken over.
Senate Republicans hold energy efficiency bill hostage. Clean up or close up. New EPA rules put the squeeze on coal. Plus,
I didn't know so many creatures were down there before, but they're all dead and they're all just laying across the bottom. Hundreds and hundreds. Thousands.
Molasses spill kills thousands of fish in Hawaii.
All of that and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Global warming, yes, it's finally dead. According to a new study, there has been a 60% increase in the amount of ocean covered with ice compared to this time last year.
No, actually, there was a 60% increase in Arctic ice this year over last year when it had its record low. And it wasn't an increase in ice, it was an increase in the area of the ice, not the volume of the ice, which has continued to decline year after year.
That means all predictions, computer forecasts have been wrong.
Wrong. It means you've been wrong, Greg Gutfield of Fox News, and you're still wrong.
Thank you.
You're welcome. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, no more rubes, dupes, or stooges needs to send us that Daily Mail article claiming that global warming is ended because there's more ice than there was last year at the Arctic when there was a record low. Written, of course, to fool those dupes, rubes, and stooges. But speaking of being wrong, Desi Doyen, we like to put our corrections right up at front. Have anything you'd like to confess?
Yes, in our last report, I misspoke. Canberra is the capital of Australia, not Sydney. And it's funny because I've actually been to Canberra. I know it's the capital, so sorry about that.
Still, your pay is being docked this week, and you're now on probation. What do you have for us today that is accurate, Desi?
Well, first, a state of emergency in northern Colorado.
All of a sudden, there was a wall about 15 feet high of water rushing down Left Hand Canyon.
Colorado's governor has issued a state of emergency as, quote, biblical rains wreak havoc. More than a month's worth of rain dumped in 12 hours in some regions, causing a dam in Larimer County to collapse. And in Boulder, entire neighborhoods were evacuated after homes were washed away overnight Wednesday night in widespread flash floods and mudslides that killed at least three people.
Who called it biblical?
The National Weather Service.
Oh, well, they always exaggerate.
Yeah, no, they don't.
Oh.
Meanwhile, in Congress,
the anarchists have taken over. They've taken over the House. Now they're here in the Senate. People who don't believe in government, and that's what the Tea Party's all about, are winning.
That was Senator Harry Reid on the Senate floor Thursday complaining about how a long-awaited, uncontroversial, bipartisan energy efficiency bill in the Senate that would have created construction jobs and helped businesses and homeowners save money was held up by Republican Senators David Vitter of Louisiana and Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, who piled on unrelated amendments to delay Obamacare and force approval of the Keystone XL pipeline. Sorry, homeowners, you don't get any help making your homes more energy efficient. In Pennsylvania, the state has filed criminal charges against an Exxon subsidiary, XTO, for illegally dumping over 50,000 gallons of toxic fracking wastewater at a well site that spilled those chemicals into a tributary of the Susquehanna River. The Exxon subsidiary says they will fight the charges because they say no lasting environmental damage was done. It's cleanup time for coal. Despite ferocious lobbying from the coal industry, the Environmental Protection Agency will issue the first ever greenhouse gas emission standards for new coal-fired power plants as required by the Supreme Court. The new standards had been withdrawn and revised to withstand expected court challenges, and now they'll require the installation of expensive carbon capture equipment, effectively preventing the construction of any new plants in the U.S.
I wouldn't think the coal industry would have a problem with that. They've been boasting about their new technology for clean coal for years, so they'll just build new plants with the clean coal technology.
Except that technology is still somewhat mythical and definitely not ready for prime time. And in truth, if there is a war on coal, it's actually being waged by cheaper natural gas. But some good news, five new underground aquifers have just been discovered in Kenya, meaning a stable source of water for generations of people in that impoverished region.
Let's get some frackers out there to poison that right away.
Finally, a different kind of spill and a different kind of poison in Hawaii.
This is the worst environmental damage to sea life that I have come across, and it's fair to say this is a biggie, if not the biggest, that we've had to confront in the state of Hawaii.
That was Gary Gill, Deputy Director for Hawaii's Environmental Health Division, after thousands of fish were suffocated in Honolulu Bay, Hawaii, after 200,000 gallons of molasses spilled from a pipeline offloading that molasses to ships. It can't be cleaned up.
The guy talking about the dead fish is named Gil?
Yes, it is.
And the spill was molasses?
Yes, it was.
Do you realize the restraint you're asking me to have here?
I'm terribly sorry, but it is very sad.
You're welcome. For much more on that story and those we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Please consider a donation while you're there to help sponsor the Green News Report. We rely on you instead of big molasses. Find us and like us on the Facebook and follow us 24/7 on the Twitters at Green News Report. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Sugar. Oh, honey, honey.
Welcome to another In Deep Radio show. I'm Angie Coiro. Something very important happened in a Northern California town this week. The city of Richmond, not far from San Francisco, will move ahead with its plans to assert eminent domain as relief for underwater homeowners. Now, why is this a big deal? Because this argument in Richmond has become the epicenter of the fight between disproportionately empowered financial institutions and up to now disempowered homeowners. If this does go forward as planned, well, what will happen depends on who you talk to. The lenders say you'll never get a mortgage in this town again with this illegal and unfair move. The activists behind it and the city council members who voted to support it believe this is a way to even the playing field and, God forbid, let the homeowners who fell victim to big money shenanigans keep their homes and let the community keep its character. How this is managed, we're going to go into to some extent this hour. You'll get even more perspective if you go to our archive and download our August 3rd hour on eminent domain. There's a lot of perspective to be heard here and the machinations of how you put it together, logistics, etc. We're going to look at these latest developments, and we're going to put it in the context of other financial developments. We hear that the economy is improving. We hear at the same time it's not improving for most of us. What does this mean that the big banks and the financial institutions may in fact be taking a blow at the hands of a city council, at the hands of a government entity? And to discuss this, we bring back to the show Richard Eskow. He's senior fellow at the Campaign for America's Future, and you're becoming a regular guest hanging around here, Richard.
Yeah, well, you got to watch that. I spent my coffee cup now.
We left the window open and he wandered back in. Kevin Whalen is joining us. He's the campaign director for the Home Defenders League, playing a key role in the developments in Richmond. Kevin, thank you for making time.
Thanks for having me.
And Morris LeGrand is right there in Richmond. He's the leader of Richmond ACE, and he is joining us locally. Morris, thank you for making time.
Thank you for having me.
And that is the Alliance for of Californians for Community Empowerment. Morris, you guys just must have been dancing with joy at what happened with the city council. It wasn't a universal victory, but it seems as though most of the council understands that this is a way, bottom line, to let people keep their homes. The argument for some centers around whether this is an appropriate use of eminent domain. And eminent domain, I think most people are familiar with, they take someone's home or a shop so that they can build an on-ramp to a freeway, or they close down a series of old, smaller buildings to build something new that will bring new financial joy to the community. So let our audience know how eminent domain figures into the foreclosure picture.
Well, here in Richmond, we have 51% of our mortgages are underwater. There are very few people in this city, it's a small city, 110,000 approximately, that really have meaningful jobs anymore, as it's a blue-collar town, manufacturing mostly, and we do know what happened to manufacturing in our country. And we are looking to just have the playing field level. Also, one of the big things that is kind of glaring here is the people of color dominate the population here with 48% Latino, 25% Black. So we were all targeted, and it's a place where there are some long-term residents, but there are a lot of people that are here within the last 10 years or so, and we're all first-time homebuyers. Mm-hmm. And not only did we have to deal with the predatory loans that were forced upon us, they're all starting to reset, and they are all way, way, way above market value here. So the eminent domain here, for once, is being used for a good purpose that will really, really help the public here, because it will increase spending in our community. It will increase our tax base so that the city doesn't have to go about trying to reshuffle finances and sell bonds and things of that nature, because we will have the money to pour back into our community. So it's a major deal here.
Well, let me go to Kevin at this point, because, Kevin, you are the campaign director for the Home Defenders League, and you have that overarching national picture of, you know, putting Richmond in perspective of what's happening. One of the things Morris brings up that I think is key that we delve into is the idea of why people are in these foreclosure messes to begin with. There was a narrative from the right, and it was pushed through Fox News and through their usual outlets, that these were greed heads. These are people who were buying a second home, trying to flip, taking advantage of second and third mortgages when they could have been more responsible for their money. Morris just depicted for us a picture of a city where people are, you know, they're blue collar, they're living in, you know, under tough economic conditions to begin with. These were not gamblers who were, you know, making a killing on the backs of these mortgages.
No, the only thing that people in Richmond did to end up underwater was buy a home for what homes cost. So I'm sure if they'd had the opportunity to buy it for half as much, they would have been glad to do that. But families need to keep a roof over their head, and so the price they paid is the price they paid for a house. Secondarily, people in Richmond, people across the country, and particularly, and we just know this for a fact, Black and Latino communities are targeted for predatory loans. And some of the most predatory and hardest to modify are the loans where Wall Street played the most complicated games, splitting up ownership and selling it off in complicated ways. In ways that now make the loans even harder to modify. And that's what these proposals to do local principal reduction, possibly using the tool of eminent domain if necessary, get at and help fix. So this is really a community stepping forward to clean up a mess that Wall Street created and has profited from a couple of ways, not been held accountable for, and has left cities and communities and families with a mess. And cities that are looking at doing this are really helping clean up a mess that was Wall Street's creation in a way that's going to work better for homeowners, communities, and even over the long run for the investors that own interest in these loans, because foreclosures only hurt values of loans and properties for everybody.
Well, you say cities, plural, and I think that's important to underline. While Richmond is out, you know, on the bleeding edge of this, it's being discussed at least in other cities. Seattle had a city council meeting just this week, which they streamed, very dramatic to watch, as people just demanded their rights to be able to stay in their own homes, their right to fight back against some of the bankers' techniques, you know, dual tracking loans, having one person tell you on the phone that, you know, okay, we've got everything fixed, you can pay this lower rate, at the same time pursuing foreclosure that the homeowner finds out, you know, at the last moment. So give me an idea of where else this is happening. We've got Seattle, we've got Richmond. Where else is this fight for eminent domain as a tool underway?
Yeah, it's a very important point, Angie. First, I can tell you that there are community groups, unions, city councils, mayors all over the country looking at this and following it. And sometimes, you know, when you're dealing with a bully, and Wall Street has very much played the bully in this case, somebody has to stand up to the bully before more people are willing to step forward. So I think you're going to see, you know, a lot more coming forward soon. But just in terms of public discussion, the city of El Monte is in the newspaper today talking about it, and that's a city that Richmond has actually talked about partnering with to form what they call a joint powers authority. That's the kind of body that would actually do the work on this. You saw people, a coalition of 30 unions and community groups talking about local principal reduction in Seattle, as you said, yesterday. And I think, you know, it's San Francisco on Monday. Supervisor Campos introduced a resolution both to stand in solidarity with Richmond, to ask Wells Fargo and the Wall Street Lobbying Association, SIFMA, to stop their bullying and harassment, and to explore using a similar program in San Francisco. And then a number of communities in New Jersey, including a small city called Irvington, but a number of others are looking at this and have talked about it publicly. But I suspect that for all these that have stepped out or people have started talking about it timidly, people see in Richmond take this stand and stand up to the bully and live to tell about it. And I think this is exactly what Wall Street is afraid of. Many more communities are going to start stepping forward.
Well, Richard Esko, let me take this over to you. You did time on Wall Street. You're an executive there, and now you're blogging in ways that show your inside knowledge. What do you fathom are the discussions happening amongst the lenders now that they see that not just activists, not just Occupy, who they can dismiss as hippies in tents, but actual city governments are starting to stand up against the lenders?
Well, you know, I think what's happened over the last year or two is when the cities first started to talk about doing this, and I think San Bernardino was one, there were several early on, and I know Richmond got in there pretty early too, but I think originally they felt they could roll over this movement. I think there was a strong sense that if they threatened the cities enough, and they're very, very good at threatening people, as Kevin intimated, that this would pretty much go away. First of all, because they could dry up any source of funding or finance for the cities to use in exercising this eminent domain. They could put pressure on the cities in other ways. But, you know, there are a couple things they didn't count on. One was the determination of great communities like Richmond and the people in them. And so I salute Morris and the people of Richmond. I used to live right near there. I have a very warm spot for Richmond, and I love the work you're doing. Kevin's been doing great work. So I think they underestimated the determination of the people in these cities. And I think that there was an inbuilt contempt toward municipalities and local governments in general. I think the feeling was that these people were kind of beneath their attention, beneath their contempt. They could roll over them. And I think they've reached the point now where they're in a little bit of shock. They weren't really expecting to have to face a serious threat from these folks. And yet, it's a perfectly legitimate use of eminent domain. Nobody seemed to get too excited about it when it's being used to take homes from people like you or Morris or Kevin or me. But when it's used to take property from Wall Street, all of a sudden people get excited. But I think people are going to find it's a defensible use of the law and of eminent domain. And I think now they're getting nervous, and rightfully so.
And so they are. And in fact, Kevin Whalen tipped us before we opened the mics here that there's been a new development, and we'll go into that more in our next segment. Kevin Whalen, campaign director for the Home Defenders League, Richard Esko, the voice you just heard, senior fellow at the Campaign for America's Future, and Morris LeGrand, who's a leader on the ground in the city of Richmond with Richmond ACE, and we'll talk to them more. The new development that Kevin tipped us off to, a federal judge today, Thursday, sided with the city of Richmond in its effort to take over mortgages from hundreds of struggling homeowners. This is from CBS in San Francisco. The district court judge ruled the city's legislative process for approving the proposal isn't complete yet, so it would be premature to issue an injunction requested by Wells Fargo and Deutsche Bank. And we don't have the appropriate villain music to put behind their names, but you can assume that that's there. Stick around for more. I'm Angie Coiro. This is In Deep. I'm Angie Cuero. We're talking about the significance of the move to use eminent domain in the California city of Richmond to help out more than 600 homeowners using eminent domain to force the sale of more than 600 homes. What would happen is a private entity that has been formed would work in conjunction with the city to buy those homes at their current value from the banks, and then help the homeowners to stay in those homes. The banks obviously don't want this to happen. They maintain that these homes have much higher value from back in the rich days when they were originally purchased. To talk about that with us, we have Maurice LeGrand, who is the leader with Richmond ACE. We have links to his work and his organization at indeepradio.com. Likewise, a link to the Home Defenders League, who is overseeing this kind of move nationally. We have their campaign director on the line, Kevin Whalen. And Richard Eskow is with a senior fellow at the Campaign for America's Future. Maurice, I mentioned before the break something that Kevin had brought to our attention, and that's today's finding. We record on Thursday for broadcast over the weekend. Today, Thursday, this federal judge found that it's premature to side with the banks and put this to a stop. It's kind of, it is a win, and every win counts. On the other hand, it's not saying, you know, that we're not going to do this. It's saying that it's premature to consider that. Talk to me a little bit about the arguments that were taking place on the city council, which did not vote unanimously to support this. What are the arguments being made on behalf of the banks, that this is not a legitimate use of eminent domain, or that it places the city in some kind of peril? What are the arguments against using this?
Well, we have a plethora of things going on from the city council. The one being would be the swing vote member, Councilman Rogers. And he's kind of placed us in a very precarious spot in saying that if there is a 1% chance of the city going bankrupt and being held responsible in any sort, it's a deal breaker for him. And I'm sure that that was something that you may have read today because it was well publicized. The other thing is that we have a couple of council members, and Council Member Bates and Council Member Bouzet, who is the vice mayor, they have taken a position that the 110,000 residents of Richmond, we are not worth fighting Wall Street for and getting Wall Street upset. So we do have some issues with our city council as it relates to this thing moving forward. However, the eminent domain issue in the suit that was filed by Wells Fargo and Deutsche Bank, it became apparent that it was frivolous in the fact that we haven't done anything. We haven't secured anything. There are no damages. We haven't enacted the eminent domain process. So it's a lawsuit in court that, for me, is a knee-jerk reaction by the big banks. Mm-hmm. Again, we're standing up to them in a way that no one has, and we do realize that it's a David and Goliath situation. However, because of the mere fact that these are our homes, this is where we live, this is where we chose to build our lives, this is where we chose to raise our families, this is where we chose to possibly retire, it's a meaningful situation worth fighting for.
Well, it's also worth pointing out that in the Bay Area, where God knows everything, I mean, a trip to the grocery store is unaffordable, that the idea of people losing these homes, ever having a chance to own a home again, is practically nil, really.
Well, there was a gentleman that spoke at City Council, and this was new information to me. And what he said is that he had been trying to purchase a home here in Richmond for 2 years. But he keeps getting outbid by these groups of cash investors. Mm. And they buy these units, all cash deals, and then they put renters in them. So the community is suffering because we are starting to diminish on the side of ownership. And it's nothing against renters. I was one for the majority of my life. This is my first home. But most renters, they don't have a stake in the community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it affects everything.
Yeah, pride of ownership is more than just a phrase. You know, you're invested in having that home. It is better for the community. That's been shown time and again. Kevin, again, I want to bring you in to put this in a national perspective. It's easy to demonize the city council member who says the number of people we have in this community are not worth going up against Wall Street for. It's easy to paint that as a bad guy sort of thing. But the fact is, Wall Street and these financial institutions have shown again and again that their muscle is huge It is true that a city could conceivably face bankruptcy if they choose to put their money into a court battle over this. But as you mentioned earlier, there are other cities looking at this. Is there some way to coalesce what's happening on a national level to maybe indemnify some of the cities against this?
Yeah, it takes courage for sure for a community to stand up to the combined fury of Wall Street and the elected officials and really the voice of people in Richmond, organized by ACE and other community groups, have stepped forward with that. But there are some practical things that should reassure people, especially as more cities step forward. One is that the city of Richmond has been working on this carefully and is working with a group of private investors that are both lining up financing from people that are interested in sort of refinancing and owning good loans. Once they're refinanced to have equity, they're actually quite desirable loans to own and service, and they think they'll have market value, and are covering all the litigation costs as they get this going. So the city is not on the hook for the legal bills to fight Wall Street on their own, which is, you know, important. The other thing that should spur folks a little bit, even if it's a little deflating, a tiny bit to those of us that are sort of angry at Wall Street and would like to see them held accountable for the trillions of dollars in damage they've caused, is that we're not really doing anything bad to the people, the investors that own the loans, if they enact this policy. In fact, what the city of Richmond has actually done so far that inspired all this fury was work with the investors group they're working with to send letters to the trustees and servicers of a pool of loans and say, we would like to buy these loans at their fair market value, the value that Wall Street banks and investors sell these loans to each other for every day. And an independent appraiser that appraises loans on the secondary market came up with the values, and the letter said quite explicitly, if you don't think these values are right, make us another offer. So the only thing that the city is asking to do is buy loans from the banks at the rate they sell them to each other, but to sell them in particular to investors that are going to do the right thing by homeowners and modify the loan so they have equity, which is actually something that banks sometimes do on their own, either because Home Defenders or Occupy Homes or ACE yells at them enough, or in their own financial self-interest, because it's better to collect money on a loan that has equity than foreclose on something else. So in the end, while Wall Street may be upset, and I think they're bothered more than anything by people using democracy to make the system work better rather than them writing the rules, there's not damages per se that anybody's looking to do to the people who own these loans. So they're going to have precious little to sue over when it comes to that point.
Richard, in the larger picture, these banks or financial groups, depending on who's holding which mortgage, you can see how this could be painted as an advantage for them. As Kevin just mentioned, fair market value, the chance to appeal the fair market value, getting money for an asset that right now they're losing money on, and something we haven't discussed yet, the fact is a lot of these financial institutions, were they forced to produce the paperwork that says they legitimately hold that mortgage, couldn't do it on a bet. So what's the downside for taking this deal and getting actual money for their assets?
Well, I think we have to distinguish here between banks as investors and banks as middlemen. And, you know, a lot of times banks are really playing both ends against the middle, and it's not their money that they're betting, and what they're betting is more risk and leveraging than it is actual concrete assets. So, I mean, I think it's important to make that distinction when we look. It will also take some of the sting of bitterness from what Kevin was saying to remind ourselves that when we're talking about some of the investors in these loans, for example, mortgage-backed securities, huge investors in mortgage-backed securities were pension funds for working people. So the banks, in bundling, slicing, and dicing these mortgages in cities like Richmond and then packaging them, mislabeling them, bribing the ratings agencies to rate them as better than they are, at the end of the day, many of the people that were getting shafted in the process were investors like pension funds that don't deserve that, don't have that coming, that are going to get potentially a fairer shake out of this than they would get from the banks themselves. I think the banks' pushback is more about their ability to control the transactions. And, you know, don't get me started on the process of, you know, not even knowing who owns what mortgage at any given time, because we could do a lot of time on that. But all in all, that's one dimension of the bank's role, perceived role, especially the mega banks, you know, the top five, the top 10, Goldman Sachs, JP Morgan Chase, Citigroup, Bank of America, where they have so many transactions happening at once. They're moving so much money here and there. Their computer systems are, you know, microseconds ahead of the game and all that stuff, that it's the loss of that ability, along with the threat that this poses to running similar kinds of bubble driving games in the future, like they've done in the past, pumping up the values of real estate, inflating it, selling it to people with outrageous appraisals from appraisers that they bribed and so on. Anything like this that threatens that is really as much about power as it is about money, and maybe in certain ways even more.
It's interesting. You were talking about what the institutions have the possibility of losing. And at Morris, I was thinking about what the residents of the city of Richmond have already lost. I mean, there was a day when it looked like, you know, the economy was good. Maybe it really was lifting all boats. Maybe we could believe in that. Maybe people could own their own homes. And at the time, you know, the people that you're working with now probably were, you know, they'd watch their TV and they'd hear some commercial come on and say, Bank of America, banking for America. And by golly, they could believe that. And I'm just wondering, some of the stories you must have heard from the residents, there's been a real loss of innocence here. Maybe these people weren't even politicized before because things were going well. Hardworking blue-collar people, they don't really have time to be politicized. They're busy feeding their families. I mean, you must have seen some real personal changes in the people you've been working with.
Well, absolutely. There are people that are vigorously working with us that have already lost their homes due to foreclosure. It's something that the banks would not work. There was no hope. They weren't modified. They were double-tracked. There were all of these things that took place, and frankly, the majority of us as brand new homeowners, you know that the first time you do anything, even such as this eminent domain effort, there's always something that you learn in the process. And there were a lot of blue-collar people, including myself, that were shoved into loans that were bad, and the housing prices inflated at a rate that, because we were first-time homeowners, it was not an anomaly for us. It was what we expected, because that's what the real estate agents and the brokers had told us. It would do this. So we were happy, and we moved on, and we didn't question a lot of the things. I know the loan that they put me into was one of the World Savings pick-a-pay loans, which we all know has deemed to be fraudulent. Mm-hmm. In its very nature. So when I look at the countrywide debacle and all of these other things and loan products that they created, and for the life of me, now that I know what I'm looking at, I cannot understand the sensibleness of long-term investment via the investors with a negative AM loan. I just don't understand how that could work. But what I've come to know is that they all collect their money on the front end, and they shovel these things around to each other, and everybody gets paid. And the person that buys the home, we end up homeless simply because the big banks have taken advantage of us in ways that they created that were just destined to fail. Even right now with my own deal, we got the Home Affordable Mortgage Program. We got accepted into that. But at the end of the day, I'll never be a homeowner because after 27 years, they're looking for a deferred income payment in a balloon of $194,000 when I'm 83 years old. And that, for me, is built-in failure.
It's not just built-in failure, but, Kevin, you're probably seeing this across the country. it's a corruption and a loss of virtually the American dream. I mean, I don't mean to get overly patriotic here, but the American dream has always been you can have a little piece of this country for yourself. You can raise your kids there. You can feel safe there. You can paint it the way you want. It seems to me the embodiment of the corruption that we've seen over the last 15 years, 20 years of government, you know, whatever since the banks were deregulated, we were headed for this point.
That's absolutely true, you know, and it's not like nobody warned about it or saw it coming. So activists with what's now ACE and other community groups that I was involved with back in the day tried to sound the alarm on predatory lending. Groups like AARP and other, you know, good advocacy and legal groups said there's this disaster. I remember working on a report called The Coming Foreclosure Crisis. But with everybody up and down the chain at the banks having a good time ripping up the rules and making billions and trillions of dollars along the way, nobody really wanted to hear that there could be anything wrong with it. And they laughed last when everything collapsed. They got bailed out, and now they're making a healthy living off of late fees and foreclosure filings. So there's been a giant transfer of wealth from specifically the communities that can least afford to lose it, poor and working class communities, and way disproportionately African American and Latino communities that had essentially all of their net wealth tied up in home equity. And that's largely gone. And what's not gone is still being drained away year by year and month by month in ways that are completely possible to arrest and reverse with good public policy.
We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to tie together the 2 hours that we did this week. Just before this, we recorded our hour on the resurgence of the power of labor and how unions are actually kind of running a little bit to catch up with labor. Just as in that story, in this story, we see the emergence of people power, and we'll talk a little bit about how we might be able to capitalize on that. And when I say we, I mean we as a country. I mean everybody. And we're going to continue this conversation with Kevin Whalen, campaign director for the Home Defenders League, Morris LeGrand, who's a leader with Richmond ACE, ACC, Richard Eskow, senior fellow at the Campaign for America's Future. Check our website for links for everything that we've been talking about, all the articles we've been referring to, the websites of our guests, and more. You'll find all that at indeepradio.com. And while you're there, feel free to toss us a comment about what you're hearing this hour and what you prefer to hear in coming hours of In Deep Radio. Stick around. We'll be right back on the other side of this break. I'm Angie Coiro.
whistleblowing, it plays a happy tune. The conductor's calling all aboard, we'll be leaving soon.
This is In Deep Radio. I'm Angie Coro. Thank you for tuning in this week. And we're talking this hour about the emerging situation with eminent domain being used in the Northern California city of Richmond, where the city council so far has voted to pursue the course of using the power of eminent domain to buy foreclosure properties from the financial institutions at their current market value and sell them back to the current homeowners, keeping them in their homes and reducing the underwater situation so many of them are in. Have a number of guests on our panel to talk about that. From Richmond itself, we have Morris LeGrand, Home Defenders League National Campaign Director is Kevin Whalen, and Senior Fellow at the Campaign for America's Future is Richard Eskow. Richard, you said not to get you started on the idea that a lot of these financial institutions can't prove that they own this property in the first place. I risk doing that anyway, because one thing I do want to talk about is how we as a people can leverage the anger that we're seeing against those banks to more political power now that we're seeing this little bit of a turn where city governments are willing to stand next to the homeowners. Other city and county governments are willing to stand up and form alliances with those city governments. It does seem like there might be something of a tide turning. We saw this before. Once people realized, you can't prove you own my house, you don't have that paperwork, there were actually politicians saying, you ask that bank to produce that paperwork and don't you dare move out of that house if they can't do it. That's a measure of empowerment for the consumer. So can you talk about how this whole picture has been, you know, politicizing people and maybe making them a little more politically active than they were before?
Well, first of all, you have to remember when you talk just about underwater houses in this country, that somewhere between 30 and 35 million Americans live in underwater homes. That means that a very large percentage of our population is victimized every month in their mortgage payment financially. So that's a huge untapped political base. And those people are paying enormous amounts, hundreds of billions in mortgage value, much of which no longer exists in the real world, as Morris's story illustrated. So pushing back on that, that's an enormous amount of leverage too. If they and their elected representatives get together in different ways and forms, and eminent domain is one of the ways to do that, to say we're going to pay what these homes are worth, but we're not going to pay what they're not worth, you've got an enormous amount of leverage there too, huge, against Wall Street and against the banks. And third is, if they do things like the city of Richmond is doing by forging alliances with investors, many of whom are also victims of bank chicanery, just as Morris and many of the rest of us, myself included, have been mistreated by banks in our own mortgages, many of these investors were as well, the victims of misrepresentation and overcharging and everything else. So if we can start to build investor people alliances, that's extremely powerful. And lastly, you know, in terms of the way they did this, basically, without going into too much detail, is the big banks formed a shell company called MERS, M-E-R-S, and it was a combination database and pseudo company where anybody working for any one of the banks could pretend to be an employee of this fake company so that they could buy and sell at anyone's mortgage, yours, mine, Kevin's, Morris's, 100 times over and never notify us. And this allowed them to drive the bubble that we have eventually experienced. It allowed them to package these things and misrepresent them to investors. I had an experience myself where all of a sudden I always paid my mortgage by the 15th. I paid it on the 11th and got hit with a $350 late payment fee.
Oh, my God.
Wait a minute. What's going on? Well, MERS had flipped my mortgage from one bank to another, and the new bank said, sorry, our payment date is the 10th. Now, if I didn't do this for a living, I could have wound up, and if I had been just a little more on the margin myself, I could have been on the fast track to foreclosure myself if I didn't know how to object to that payment and, for example, wasn't able to make that unfair payment. So this is, so this robbing of people's houses, this mechanism, this database and shell company was a key part of doing all that. And so part of what we're seeing is people pushing back. There have been different court results. There have been many court hearings, and the results have been mixed. But basically, for someone to say, who says you own this house anyway? And again, this whole process, it was a way to evade local taxes because you didn't have to file the proper paperwork, which might involve a fee at the county courthouse. So it was a way to screw local governments out of payments they were due. It was a way to flip people's mortgages. It was a way to enable the kind of abuse that I and many other people experienced with those unnecessary fees. So I think that if we're able to turn back, and again, it was an expression, just by doing it, it was an expression of contempt for communities. It was saying, I don't care about your county laws, I don't care about your city laws, I don't even care about your state laws, I'm having dinner with the president next week. Well, you know what? You better start caring about those community laws because we're coming to get you now. And I think that's a close of the loop and bring it back to your question, Angie. Communities have power, cities have power, people have power. If they're willing to take it and use it, they can change the equation here.
That's Richard Eskow. I think it is not unironic. If you search on MERS, which is the mortgage program that the mortgage electronic registration system that Richard just mentioned, you will also bring up as a secondary result the MERS virus, which is a coronavirus. MERS virus, why doctors are calling it a threat to the entire world. I just wanted to let you know those two things come up together. Morris, let me go back to the local residents in Richmond, you know, where you have been working with them. And I think that Richmond might be emblematic of the kind of cities where this kind of thing has been done to people who normally wouldn't have what Richard just described for us. Richard writes about this stuff for a living. He worked on Wall Street. He knows all this. And some of the people we see getting preyed on they're the exact opposite. You know, we were raised in blue collar. You know, you sign the contract, you trust the banker that you're dealing with. And, you know, it's the corruption of the trust there. But it's also very methodical to go after people who don't have the wherewithal to fight back. And one of the things that ACCE is doing is helping them to coalesce together as a group and to fight back. If there are people listening to this who want to replicate ACE and its success in their own communities, how do they get a start on that?
Well, I would say that the first thing that they would need to do is come together and be transparent one with another. That seems to be the biggest thing, because in our country, we've adopted this deal that our business is secret and we don't want anybody to know that we're failing. However, the failure is massive, and it's across the board, and people are beginning to realize that they're not the only ones in this predicament. With that being said, one of the things that is happening here in Richmond is that the meetings that we're having, they're getting larger, and we're starting to hear more real-life stories. There's a gentleman here by the name of Juan Vasquez. Mr. Vasquez is a businessman in Richmond who owns a small mechanic shop where he did well for years. And all of a sudden, over the last 5-6 years, his customers have come to him and they're struggling to have enough money. And when their vehicles need repairing, they'll bring them to him and receive an estimate. And the common thing has been that, okay, I'll come back next month when I don't have enough money, to never return. So his business is now suffering, which has caused him to be in a position where he's not able to keep up with his own mortgage because he's underwater. So not only is the citizen in Juan Vasquez getting it from one side, he's getting it from a professional side as well. So there's another business that will fail in the city. There's another residence that will fail in the city. Last year, we had $264 million worth of foreclosure loss of wealth because of foreclosures in this city in 1 year. So I would have to say that the effect that it's having here is massive. And for anyone that's listening, if you see anything that resembles that at all in your city, I would say come together, get online and Google ACE and find out how to set up a chapter in your city.
And the same thing, very powerful there, Morris. The same thing, Kevin, I take to you is to ask people how to get with the Home Defenders League and how they can replicate some of the successes that you've had. But I also want to ask you about that same element Morris brought up that I hadn't thought of, which is the way that the banks and financial institutions can capitalize on shame. Our country as a whole has always been, you know, we're proud that we don't get into debt. You know, there's still some shame attached to bankruptcy. And it never occurred to me before that shame on behalf of a homeowner who goes underwater can actually be leveraged by the companies to let it be a private tragedy instead of a public movement.
That's absolutely right. So what people anywhere in the country can go to homedefendersleague.org, or just Google Home Defenders League. You can get connected to great community organizations like ACE across the country that are part of the Home Defenders League. But whether or not there's an organization already in your town, you can sign up and get on a training call about how to defend your home and start a petition to get the bank to treat you more fairly. You can actually go online. We work together with OccupyOurHomes.org. That's got a great petition system. We've got twice a month calls for activists. So anybody anywhere in America can go to homedefendersleague.org, also find out a lot more about local principal reductions and join the fight. What you're saying about shame is really true. In every meeting that I've ever been in with homeowners who are fighting banks and bank mistreatment, there's a period where a couple people tell their story. And then people stand up and say, you know, I felt like it was only me. I felt like I was dumb, like I screwed up, and now I realize they did this to everybody. And you just have to plan for that time if you have a meeting about this, that people have to tell their story out loud to come to that realization. You know, an irony on when we talk about overcoming that shame and fighting for what we call principal reduction, for people to pay, as Richard said, what their home is worth and not what it's not worth, is that businesses would do that routinely for each other. So when the Mortgage Bankers Association, for example, found themselves underwater and short on money for their headquarters in D.C., they renegotiated their mortgage and got principal reduction, and I don't think they felt bad or lost any sleep over it. But working-class Americans, the industry can sort of shame people into paying money that for value that was never really there in the first place.
Richard, do you want to add to that?
Yeah, two things. One is on this issue of shame. You know, when I started writing about this pretty early on, and I have a piece out there somewhere called Letters from Foreclosure Hell, because I think I was one of, you know, early writing about it, and I got letters from people, emails from people saying things like, I'm a single mother and I was going to kill myself. Mm. I was going to kill myself because I thought I had failed my son and myself by not being able to make my home payments, until I read your piece and realized that it was done to me and it was not me doing it. So if you don't think that had a big emotional impact on me, you know, and I think that Morris and Kevin are exactly right, that this is something that is used in order to exploit people. There's nothing to be ashamed of. People were lied to. People were told this is a great deal. People look to their bankers as an knowledgeable ones to say, yes, your home is a great investment. It'll always go up. Borrow it against it. Do whatever you want to do, you know, because we've got your back. So people were deceived. They were tricked. It was a national sting. They shouldn't be ashamed to acknowledge that, and they should definitely share their stories. It will not only help them organize, it will make their emotional burden lighter. And lastly, on the stimulus, imagine if there's $200 billion or $150 billion in home value that people are paying that those homes aren't worth, and we can free that money, that could be a bigger stimulus than Obama's original stimulus at no cost to the public. And the Mr. Vasquez's of this world, that those people would go to Mr. Vasquez and get their cars fixed. The entire economy could be uplifted by the process of relieving people from this burden of what the banks have enchained them to. And I think that should be our national ambition in this fight.
Well, that makes me want to take it back to you, Kevin, because, you know, at first Morris and now Richard has talked about the way that this topic of foreclosure homes extends so far beyond just the people who are in those homes. I'm curious, does the Home Defenders League, is it made up primarily of homeowners? Are there people from different walks? I mean, who are you and how do you attract people who understand that this is not just the fight of the homeowners themselves?
That's right. So it's made up of anybody that wants to join and any allies. It's completely open. It's completely free to join. And we think that everybody in America, for reasons Richard's saying, except maybe the CEO of a bank that's, you know, making their money off of late fees, but just about anybody else has a good reason to fight for this. it's potentially still the best thing that we can do for the economy this far into the crisis. The Home Defenders League has lots of people that just want to see their communities get better, who are fighting foreclosure. Or, and you know, we should make this distinction, there's plenty of people that are underwater on their mortgage, that owe more on a loan than the house is worth, who are not facing foreclosure, who are making that payment every month. They're just getting a bad deal, and they're putting out money that they could be spending on taking care of their families and on local businesses. And so we try to have a big tent for everyone like that. You know, with the scandals of everything that the banks have done and MERS, there's plenty of anger out there already at the banks. I don't think it's gone away one bit since the Occupy movement or the bailout. I think what we need is hope, the sense that people can do something by coming together. And I think that's what the Home Defenders League tries to organize, and that's what people in Richmond have given us by taking the stand this week. Hope that you really can use democracy to make a difference. And I think that's what the banks fear and exactly what we need.
Yeah, amen. Morris, we're going to finish it up where we started with you, and tell us what is between what happened this week and the actual beginnings of eminent domain procedures in Richmond. What has to happen next?
Well, the first thing that has to happen is they're reconvening on Monday. He is giving Wells Fargo and Deutsche Bank and BlackRock a chance to state their case in more detail before he throws it out, which is what we're all hoping for. After that, we have to go through the process with MRP out of San Francisco, and they can clearly explain how they can indemnify the city and that the city won't be on the hook for anything. The big sticking point at this point is that there is no insurance that is available for MRP. So we've got our cards on the table, and we've got a tough hand to play, and we need a supermajority in the city council. But I'm confident that if we can keep going at the pace that we're going, that there will be something very, very positive that comes out of it.
And I hope that is true, and we'll check back in with you, Morris. That's Morris LeGrand, joined by Kevin Whalen and Richard Askow. Thanks to all of them for making this a good hour. In Deep Radio is a production of Mix TV. You can send feedback and suggestions to our website, indeepradio.com. Our executive producer is Gordon Whiting. There is no way to thank engineer Matt Fiddler enough for all his hard work shaping and growing this show. He is amazing, talented, and a key part of the Indeep family, and he's leaving for his next big adventure. Matt, we love you, and we are going to miss you like crazy. Leaving all of that work in the hands of our wonderful producer, Forrest Phillips. That's it for us this week. We'll see you next time around. I'm Angie Cuero. Thanks for tuning in this week to In Deep with Angie Cuero, a production of TalkBack Studios. You can get more information about us at indeepradio.com. And while you're there, you can become a member and support our work. There's a link there to contact us, too, with any questions or feedback. We're developing a series on mental health issues in our country, especially in this economy, and we'd love to have you be part of that. Please send us your topic suggestions, your stories, and your questions through our website. Click the contact button at indeepradio.com. Join us again this time next week for two more hours of in-depth conversation. I'm Angie Cuero. We'll see you then. You're listening to WPWC, 1480 AM, Dumfries, Virginia. We Act Radio, home of Washington's progressive working community.